Hey, everyone. Welcome to Locked On Lakers for Friday. Brian Kamenetsky, Andy Kamenetsky. The Lakers get some good news heading into Friday's game and face a relatively winnable road trip, at least by NBA standards. That's next.
You are Locked On Lakers, your daily Los Angeles Lakers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Thanks to everybody for making Locked On Lakers first listen of every day, Monday through Friday, no matter how or where you get your podcasts. Always free. It's never going to be behind a paywall. Locked On Lakers on YouTube is where you go to see the show, watch the magic happen, and participate in an ever-growing community of Lakers fans who are talking to us. They're talking to each other. They leave questions. Please leave questions and comments that we can use on the show. We definitely want to do that. Would love to pass that 10,000 subscriber mark. You guys are really helping grow this community, so we really appreciate it. Want to let you know that today's episode is brought to you by BetOnline. BetOnline has you covered this season with more props, odds, and lines than ever before. BetOnline, where the game starts. A lot of the news, Andy, has been coal-related, to use the Christmas metaphor. A lot of coal in the stocking for the Lakers lately, given the Anthony Davis injury.
That's not even coal in the stocking. That's nobody left anything. We don't even know what the damn injury is at this point.
Yeah, like, we still don't know. We risked an entire show for Thursday on the idea that what if the Lakers update the condition of Anthony Davis? This thing that was supposed to be done on Monday, it was not done on Monday or Tuesday or Wednesday or Thursday. And look, folks, it's probably not going to happen on Friday either. We still don't know what is wrong with Anthony Davis.
No, at this point, as far as your metaphor goes, it's Santa just skipped over your house because he was running behind.
Okay, so maybe the call was Wednesday, no LeBron, no Reeves, no Westbrook, no, and no victory either in Sacramento. So the news is looking better for Friday, and I guess early in the road trip, both LeBron and Russell Westbrook are expected to play Friday night against the Hornets, the woebegone Hornets. Austin Reeves was upgraded from doubtful to questionable, so he may not be on the floor Friday, but it does at least indicate that he could be available for the Lakers as early as Christmas on Sunday and be part of this road trip coming up. It is super duper important road trip. So I guess, you know, as far as, you know, that's decent news heading into Christmas. Small gifts for the Lakers.
Well, you know what? If that's not enough for you, Brian, LeBron James would tell you right now, doubt the Lakers and doubt him leading these Lakers at your own peril, because he tweeted out today at King James, fate whispers to the warrior, you cannot survive the storm. The warrior whispered back, I am the storm. It is Walter White telling Skyler, I am the danger.
Really?
LeBron is the one who knocks. That's what it is. You cannot survive the storm. The warrior whispered back, I am the storm. This is Walter telling Skyler, I am the danger.
Do you think he's the storm, Andy?
He has been the storm. LeBron has often been the storm over the course of his NBA career.
Is he currently the storm? Many people have been the storm. Is he currently the storm?
I would say this. He's playing pretty well. He played very well in the loss against Sacramento. He was, without question, the one Laker who showed out the most. I would say as storms go right now, though, as far as the overall effect, he's maybe one of those that got a name and then has been downgraded to like just tropical.
It once was a category five hurricane, but now it's just a,
it's roll up your windows, drive carefully.
As good as he was Wednesday in Sacramento, that storm lost by 16. The storm didn't have a lot of help. I will give it that. I mean, the whole doubt made your own peril thing. And
LeBron is the one who knocks.
Yeah. If they don't get some dudes back, I don't think it matters who knocks. LeBron can't carry them in that way anymore.
Famously, you may recall last season, he said, bring all your jokes about, you know, us being the AARP team.
Yes.
Tell us over and over how old we are. Bring that energy so I can throw it back in your face at the end of the season. And then he just kind of quietly let us.
Yeah, we just stopped talking about, like, because we did make the AARP jokes.
Yeah,
and the team, to recap, was awful.
Yeah, he kind of forgot that.
They were, in fact, entirely too old. And LeBron got hurt. Westbrook coming back, Reeves coming back, whatever, potentially. Maybe what this is, though, like, he is stormy enough, I think, to beat the Hornets.
Sure.
On Friday.
They should win that game. Period.
They really should. And I somebody left a comment on the YouTube page today, I think joking that they should do a highlight reel, like a mashup of every time that you and I have called a game a must win. Because this will be the 32nd game of the season. And I'm pretty sure we've called six of them at least must wins. We're going to do it again. Because what's the 13 and 17, right? I'm not missing anything. They cannot afford to lose a game against a team that's worse than them. And if LeBron plays 13 and 18, I'm sorry, I should say, if LeBron plays, if Westbrook is back, if Dennis Schroeder continues to do what he's doing, if Thomas Bryant, they ought to beat the Hornets on their own floor. The Lakers played pretty well at home. And if they can do that, Andy, as far as road trips go, this storm actually does have a chance for some degree of success, even without Anthony Davis. So we'll explain that next.
Did you know that driving high is considered driving under the influence? That's right. Driving under the influence of marijuana is against the law in every state, even in states where marijuana is legal. That means driving high can get you a DUI. And if you think law enforcement can't tell when you're driving high, you're wrong. Your friends can tell. Your coworkers can tell. Even your parents can tell. Everyone can tell. So what makes you think that law enforcement officers don't know when you're driving high? Driving under the influence of marijuana can slow your response time, change how you perceive time and speed. And even if you think you're fine to drive when you're high, you're not. And the bottom line is, if you feel different, you drive different. Driving high is driving under the influence. So remember, drive high, get a DUI. Paid for by NHTSA.
All right. So we're going to try in this show to set a little bit of the context of as the Lakers kind of and the NBA gets into trading season. The Lakers have some options. There are three or four different ways this could play out. And also the league is in a very interesting place in terms of generating trades that I think is kind of fascinating and will obviously have an impact on the Lakers and how they operate. Also, Andy, central to what they might do is this road trip and the results from this road trip. The Lakers, they hopefully go, you know, hit the road 14 and 18. 13 and 19 is significantly worse. But as far as NBA road trips go, where you can't just choose your opponent, you can't just say, let's play San Antonio four times, this is about as winnable as you get. The Mavericks are a 500 team on Christmas Day. The Magic suck. That's the second game on the trip. The Heat are a 500 team. That's Wednesday. A week from today, it's the Hawks. They're a 500 team. And then you finish a week from Monday after the New Year against the Hornets. I don't want to sit here and say they should win four games. They should win, you know, whatever. But there isn't a game on that trip where you look at it and say, I mean, something really weird is going to have to happen for the Lakers to win. Assuming they have everyone but AD, they ought to be able to compete in every single one of those games.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, the Mavericks are the one team that at full strength, particularly at home, you look at and say, all right, that might be a particularly difficult game and maybe unwinnable without Anthony Davis. I still think they should be able to compete, and particularly if they can manage to find a way to slow Luka at all. If you slow Luka, the Mavericks fall apart. But then from there, you go down to, you know, the Heat have been a totally schizophrenic team. You know, they always get the benefit of the doubt because Eric Spoelstra seemingly knows how to always get the best out of any roster. Pat Riley has gravitas, but the reality is they are a very flawed team, and it feels like those flaws are finally starting to expose themselves in ways that you can't overcome just through individual talent.
Plus, players or coaches. Also don't even know who's going to play. Like, you don't know, is Jimmy Butler going to be available that game or not? Is like, it is very hard to predict even who's going to be on the floor for Miami from game to
game. And the Hawks have been really underwhelming after acquiring DeJounte Murray. There has been a lot of coverage over the last week or so about infighting between Nate McMillan and Trae Young. You know, we've seen that DeJounte Murray and Trae Young have not found a real chemistry yet. The team does not do particularly well with both of them on the court together. There's starting to become a lot of focus on the idea of Trae Young is obviously a really talented offensive force, but is he somebody that you can actually win games with on a regular basis? And, you know, we will see hopefully today that Charlotte is imminently beatable no matter where you play them.
I mean, they got beat up pretty bad by the Clippers. On Wednesday. LaMelo Ball is an excellent player. He's back on the floor. Part of the reason their record is as bad as it is because Ball has been hurt for all but like six games this season. And so like that makes a difference. They are not quite as bad as the 8-24 record would suggest.
But they sure ain't good.
Right. That's the thing. Not. It's like, when the Lakers were 2-10, you look at it and you say, you know, they're not that bad. But you don't look at them and say they're really good. And look, Gordon Hayward's been hurt a lot of the season and all of that. But they're not a good team. And the Lakers, even if they're, you know, a little better than the record suggests, the Lakers cannot lose this game at home, heading out onto the trip, and expect the, you know, front office to really feel motivated to do anything to rescue the season. And then, like, I just, you know, I know people, a couple people on the chat of, you know, being too easy on them. I'm being too easy on them or whatever. I don't know which games they're going to win. It wouldn't surprise me if they lost more than they won on this trip. It wouldn't surprise me if they won more than they lost. I don't think the Lakers are a better team than Atlanta overall, you know, but I'm just saying that they have enough to go out and give these teams good games if they have their full complement of players. And as far as NBA road trips go, it doesn't get easier than this.
Right.
This is about as easy as you can get.
And to your point, though, that you made about the front office and confidence in them, I mean, with every single game that they watch, they presumably get more information that they're looking for in terms of deciding whether they're going to make a trade, what type of trade they feel like they're going to make, and how big of a trade. I see it as they have four possibilities. You're making a trade either for this season only, which is likely some combination of Patrick Beverley and or Kendrick Nunn, second round pick, definitely not a first. And it's something that is fairly cosmetic. It's a bit of a Band-Aid for this season. You know, whether you say it's just for appearances sake or whether because you genuinely want to try to give LeBron, AD when he's back, and whoever else is on this team some degree of more help than they already have for this season. It is basically about this season, and it's pretty low commitment. The second option is you make a trade that is for this season, but really more about next season. And that opens up all possibilities, as limited as the Lakers are, Russell Westbrook's contract, two first-round picks, all of it. But then by definition, you close off pretty much all opportunities for this upcoming offseason. LeBron, AD, and whoever you traded for, those guys are going to be on the team next season. They're going to be the foundation of the 23-24 team, and you're basically just getting in the practice now for next season. You're not trading for anybody that would be an expiring deal or a walkaway if you're giving up that much capital. That would be insane. Correct. This team is nowhere close to good enough that you would feel like, all right, we're making a push and whatever happens, happens.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Yeah.
The next option would be do nothing. And you let this season play out as it will, either because you were looking to maximize the most amount of optionality and flexibility for this upcoming offseason, and you think that's the best way to create the strongest team possible for 23-24.
Generally speaking, you have more, it is easier to reconstruct a team, to do stuff, make bigger moves and all that. It is easier to do that generally in the offseason than it is at the trade deadline. Well, there are always exceptions, but that is generally how it works.
Yeah, you would just, ultimately, you've determined that your optionality and flexibility is best this coming offseason, and that may unfortunately mean sacrificing this year, but when you're looking at the big picture, that seems like the better option. Or it's because, theoretically, if perhaps improbably, you are just letting the season play out because the goal is this offseason, tear it all down. But ultimately, those are your three options. You are either trading for this season.
Four options.
Well, yes, I guess.
You lay out, the Lakers sort of have four options in front of them as you lay it out there.
Right. It is either to trade for this season, likely something smaller if it's for this season only, trade for this and next season, do nothing for the optionality of this offseason. Do nothing because you are looking to blow it up.
What the NBA market looks like actually has a significant amount of impact on these scenarios that you're talking about. And I particularly find scenarios 3 and 4 to be really interesting, whether you basically wait to build around the current superstars that you have, or basically wait so you can blow it, the whole thing up and trade those guys. We'll talk about it next.
Locked On Lakers is brought to you by BetOnline. BetOnline.net, your number one source for sports betting info, stats, news, and analysis. Get the latest odds and trends for every professional amateur league out there, from football to basketball, soccer, and esports. They've got it all at BetOnline.net. And if you love sports podcasts, just like this one you're listening to right now, you can find those at BetOnline as well. Just the fastest, easiest way to get your betting fixed, get all that great information and insight. Head to the website today, use your mobile device, learn more about the trends in action, bet online where the game starts.
Okay, so in terms of the stuff that happens this year, if you're looking to try to figure out what moves the Lakers can make, Mark Stein, he of his excellent Substack that is absolutely worth a subscription, had a post today, and he was looking just at the Eastern Conference, but the point applies to both. Part of making trades is based on the market, and the market requires sellers. If you look around the NBA right now, trying to figure out exactly who the sellers are is no easy task. Stein in the Eastern Conference says, it currently lays out that there are two teams that absolutely are sellers. The Pistons are in position to sell. The Hornets are in position to sell at 8-24 and 8-26 for the Pistons. These are teams that ultimately aren't going anywhere this season. They don't need their veteran players. They have some guys that are worth something to other teams. He acknowledges teams like the Magic and Wizards could end up there. Maybe the Bulls if they get really radical. Maybe even the Raptors if they get really radical. But there aren't a ton of obvious sellers in the Eastern Conference. In the West, I think the only teams you look at and say absolutely 100% going to be sellers at the deadline, the Rockets, and that's Eric Gordon. They don't have anything else to sell. And the Spurs, and they have Josh Richardson, Doug McDermott,
Jakob Poeltl.
Maybe Jakob Poeltl. But two of those three names, at the very least, don't move the needle for most teams. And Poeltl might be somebody they hold on to until the offseason and get a really good deal. Plus, centers are hard to trade. When you expand that out, Andy, some of the names that are out there, the big names, there's like Bogdanovich, maybe Eric Gordon, Turner and Hield, if the Pacers choose to do that. there are not a ton of impactful names even that have been put out there. All of this I mentioned because in terms of using your options, particularly something to create for this year that impacts next year, the options you were laying out in the last segment, it means the price for all of these things is going to be higher. The Lakers don't have a lot to compete with. They don't have a lot of stuff to offer. A tight market that is a seller's market hurts the Lakers in terms of trying to come up with something good that makes sense, that really does improve them with the assets that they have.
Yeah, I mean, there are a few other teams too, like in terms of being a wild card, that, you know, the Pacers, nobody can quite figure out yet what they're going to be doing with Buddy Hield and especially Miles Turner. I mean, he's he has been rumored on the block for like the last 3 years. You're also, though, hearing a decent amount from very plugged-in reporters that there is a strong non-zero chance that he ends up re-signing with the Pacers after all of this. So
yeah,
they're difficult to get a beat on right now. The Suns are an interesting team only because they need to figure out something with Jay Crowder. You know, in that situation, he is away from the team.
And there's some of the, by the way, if you haven't seen the news, like some of the news of like what they want for Crowder is insane. Like if the Lakers gave up a first round pick to bring in Jay Crowder, that would be awful.
And the Suns in and of itself are an interesting team because they're transitioning ownership. So how does a team go about making trades during this period where that's happening? You know what I mean? So it's a very interesting period right now in terms of trying to figure out the options that you have there, which on one hand could, as frustrating as it has been for Laker fans, as frustrating as it has seemed openly at times for LeBron, you could look at the front office and say, all right, they are justified in being pretty picky about this. Not, you know, not just because they're working with so few assets right now that they have total control over, but also because there may not be much to trip over your feet to be the first in line for it. You know, there was a great quote in a recent piece from Eric Pincus when he was laying out the trade landscape. This exec told Eric Pincus that, you know, the closer you get to the trade deadline, the more fair the asks become in terms of making a deal. Right now, they are at their highest because the teams holding out have the luxury of waiting a couple months before they eventually have to make their move. And if you wait this thing out, you might be able to get the best possible deal. The problem for the Lakers is the longer they wait this out, the less it may even matter if they make a trade.
Time is the enemy. I mean, right. Look, even if the Lakers can win on Friday and have a successful road trip and so they're not out of it. Like if they can kind of just tread or water around 500 while AD is out and stick around and try to maybe claw back a game or two in January when they're home a little bit more and so on. But they can't, you know, if they're 5 or 6 games under 500 or 7 games under 500 in March, you know, in February or when, you know, when the trade deadline rolls around, like in early February, time is not their friend here. So, I mean, that extra month makes a difference. You know, January versus February definitely makes a difference.
Yeah, and then like, you know, the Lakers have been linked a lot to the Bulls lately. And, you know, there's been a lot of reporting of late about turmoil between Zach LaVine and the franchise and them not being on the same page. Shams and Darnell Mayberry at The Athletic had a piece about DeMar DeRozan and Zach LaVine personally getting along very well, but professionally not being on the same page. Like on the court, they're having a difficult time finding a real chemistry as two guys who are fairly ball dominant players and like really seeing eye to eye on how to make this work. Chris Haynes from Bleacher Report, an exec told him that he believes that if things keep going like this for the Bulls, that DeMar DeRozan could ask to be traded this offseason in the final year of his deal. And, you know, the Lakers have been attached to DeRozan for like a year. But one of the things that I think is interesting about this, these proposed DeRozan and Nikola Vucevic deals, if you're the Lakers, you're giving up those first those two firsts, most likely with Russ, to make that deal happen, you have to be willing to re-sign Nikola Vucevic, I think, to make it worth it. He's in a walk-away year right now, and I don't love that fit with him and Anthony Davis, particularly defensively. I don't really like it at all. But the other thing is, you have to be willing to commit and possibly extend DeMar DeRozan, who's going to be turning 34 next year. He is a better fit alongside LeBron and AD than Russell Westbrook, but he's not perfect by any stretch. And one would think, given everything that has happened as the result of bringing in Russell Westbrook, that the Lakers would be much more particular about fit than star power, given what's happened. And again, DeRozan's better than Westbrook, but there are a lot of reasons that it's not a great fit.
Well,
but final thing, you're talking about a scenario where you are potentially committed longer to DeMar DeRozan and Nikola Vucevic than you are LeBron and AD.
Look, there's no easy out.
That would give me some pause.
Right. And I'll lay these things out. The things that I think are generally true, and we can kind of marinate on it as we head into the road trip next week. It is really hard to build a team through free agency. The Lakers don't have enough money to do it anyway, even if
If they're star hunting in particular, they don't
right,
have the
that's
money.
The thing. They can't build, but they can. But that said, I do think it is easier to do all of these things.
They could build infrastructure through free agency this upcoming offseason.
At least some.
They just don't seem to care about infrastructure.
But let's say they had $30 million and I'm just making up a number that is.
That's probably about
relatively in the ballpark.
Yeah.
That's two pretty good players in the NBA now. It's certainly not three or four.
No.
So you can start to build some things out with that. You still have your picks that you can then turn around and trade. They have, I think it is undeniable. They have are likely to have an easier time and more flexibility this summer, even to try to do something big. I think there is an assumption, I think, that sometimes fans have where, well, the Bulls are going to have to blow it up. That does not mean they have to blow it up by the trade deadline. They can. They do not have to. They might very well think this is a franchise-altering moment, just as it was franchise-altering when we brought these dudes in. It's franchise-altering when we send them out. Better to do that in the calm of the offseason. The Bulls, like a lot of teams, are out of the best lottery odds for Wembanyama. They cannot tank for Victor at this point. I think they have 13 wins. That's already too many. So they're going to have lottery odds, but they're not going to be able to get down to the worst lottery odds, to get Wembanyama. So the tanking thing is not going to be an option for a lot of teams, even that might make trades. That's another thing that works in the Lakers' favor for just saying, you know what, our best opportunity to genuinely improve the team is in the offseason. But I'll leave you with this. To your point that you were making in the second segment about option three versus option four, option three is wait for the offseason. That's the best chance to reload for Anthony Davis and LeBron James. Option four is wait for the offseason so you can trade LeBron James and Anthony Davis because ultimately you think it's not going to work. The question the Lakers have to figure out is what is going to be different next year? How can you go into next year, even with a better supporting cast, thinking that this will be the year that Anthony Davis will be healthy and this LeBron James is going to be more spry now than he was a year before in year 21 at age 39? You have to believe that core is as good as you're going to do. And then also understand that if you try to trade Davis this offseason, especially if this foot injury turns out to be something really bad, you're trading him at the lowest possible value. This is an argument for just sticking with it. And trading LeBron is going to be a lot harder than you think because LeBron is advertised to everybody that he wants to do short-term stuff so he can leave the door open to play with Bronny. even those options, Andy, are pretty lousy for the Lakers.
It also gets to the idea of, can the Lakers even stomach doing any type of rebuild, which they've shown absolutely no appetite for whatsoever. But
if you're going to do it, you got to be able to turn these guys into something really good. And I'm not even sure that's a choice.
There may be no good time to do this. You just have to do it. If it's over, it's over. You know what I mean? Like, at some point, if it's over, it's over. You don't get to pick when it's over. It just is.
And we'll do a whole show on this, because, you know, there's a lot of factors into it that we can't figure out right now. Locked On Lakers on YouTube is where you go to see everything. Everybody have a great Christmas, and we will speak to you at the very least following the Christmas Day game for Monday.